Tonight is May the 17th, and we continue in Parshas Vayeshev. We are on page 208. We'll have a slightly abridged class tonight so that I can go daven mincha. Last time we discussed Yehuda's marrying the daughter of Shua and having three sons, Er, Onan, and Shelah, and then finding a wife, Tamar, for Er, and then Er sinned and he was killed. Then Onan did Yibum, the elaborate marriage, and married his brother's wife, Tamar. Then Onan did the same sin and he died. And then Yehuda was now concerned that it is Tamar who is although she appears to be righteous, but is in fact somehow evil, and as a result her husbands are dying, and therefore Yehuda is afraid to marry her to his third son Shelah, since Shelah is Yehuda's last hope, since his wife has stopped giving birth, and he knows that his descendants will be royalty in amongst the Jewish people, and he does not want to squander the opportunity. And so he tells Tamar, go home to your father's house and wait there until Shelah grows up. He uses Shelah's youth as his excuse, that Shelah's too young to marry and she should go and wait in her father's house. And so she does. And that brings us to Pasuk Yud Beis, verse 12 at the bottom of the page. Vayirbu hayamim, and the days became many. Batamas Bas Shua Eshes Yehuda, and Bas Shua, the daughter of Shua, the wife of Yehuda, died. Vayinachem Yehuda, Yehuda was consoled. Vayal al Gozezet Sono, and he went up to those who were shearing his sheep. Hu v'chira re'ehu ha'adulami, he and Chira, his Adulami friend, Timnasa to Timno, or Timnas. Vayugam v'samar leimar, and was told to Tamar, saying, Hinei chamich ole simnasa lagoz tzano, behold, your father-in-law is going up to Timna to shear his sheep. Vatasar bigdei amenusa me'aleha, and she removed her widow's clothing from upon her. Vatachas bat so'if batisa lof, and she covered herself, she covered herself with the veil, and she wrapped herself up. She sat at the opening of the eyes. Asher alderach Timnasa, that was on the road to Timna. Kira asaki gadal Shelah, for she saw that Shelah had grown up. Vehu lo nitna lo liisha, and he was not given to her. And he lo nitna lo liisha, and she was not given to him as a wife. In other words, she saw that she had thought she was waiting for Shelah to grow up, and Shelah had grown up, and still she was not being married to him. And so now she decided to take matters into her own hands. Vayir'eha Yehuda, Yehuda saw her. Vayachsheveha lizona, and thought her to be a prostitute. Ki chisesafaneha, for she covered her face. Simple meaning is, he couldn't tell who she was because her face was covered. Vayet eleha el haderech, and he turned to her to the road. Vayomer, and he said, Havana avo eleich. They say, come if you please. Havana avo eleich, I will consort with you. Ki lo yada ki chalo so he, for he did not know that she was his daughter-in-law. Vatomer, and she said, Mati tenli ki savo eleich, what will you give me if you will consort with me? Vayomer, and he said, Anochi ashalachi di'izi minatzon, I will send a young goat from the flock. Vatomer, she said, Intitain eravon atshalchecha, if you'll give a collateral until you send it. As Yehuda agreed to send something that he didn't have with him. And so, apparently she didn't trust him. And she said that if you give me a collateral now, until you send that young goat, then I'll accept. Vayomer, he said, Mahay Ravon Asheret Elach. So he asked her, what is the collateral that I should give you? Vatomer, she said, Chosamcha ufsilecha umatecha asher yodecha, your signet ring and your, they say, wrap. It can mean a belt. And the staff that is in your hand. Vayitan la, he gave it to her. Vayavoy la, he consorted with her. Vatar lo, and she became pregnant from him. Vatokam batelech, she got up and she left. Vatasar tzi'ifa me'aleha, and she removed her veil from upon her. Vatilbash b'idei almenusa, and she wore, she put on her widow's clothing. Vayishlach Yehuda eskediho yizim, and Yehuda, keeping his end of the bargain, sent the young goat, biyad re'ehu ha'adulami, in the hands of his friend the adulami. Lakachas ho'e ravon miyad ho'isha, to take the collateral from the hands of the woman. V'lo mitza'a, and he didn't find her. Vayishalas anshem mekoman lemor, and he asked the men of her place, saying, ayeha kireisha hi va'inai mahadarach, where is the prostitute that was on the eyes on the road, which would mean in front of the eyes on the road, in a visible place on the road. Vayomru, and they said, there was no kideisha here, there was no prostitute here. Vayashav el Yehuda, he returned to Yehuda, Vayomru, and he said, lo mitzasi, I didn't find her. Vagaman sheham makom amru, and also the men of the place said, lo haisava ze kideisha, there was no prostitute here. Vayomru Yehuda, tikachla, and Yehuda said, let her take it, which means, let her keep the collateral. Penet niyelavuz, lest we be, they translate it as laughing stock, lest we be degraded. Hine shalachni agid liyazeh, behold, I sent this young goat, and you didn't find her. That's as far as we're going this evening. You know the rest of the story, that once it is discovered that she's pregnant, there is going to be a court case against her that is going to condemn her to death, and then Yehuda will admit in the end that he is the one who lived with her, and she will be spared. Now, there are a lot of nuances here that we have to read carefully and to understand what is happening over here. The simple reading of the story is that Yehuda's wife died, and Yehuda's wife dying coincides with Shela having grown up and Tamar not being given to Shela. So Yehuda and Tamar, two things happen to them independently, but seemingly coincidentally. And that is that Yehuda lost his wife and seems to be comforted by going to shear his sheep, which is towards Timnah. And Tamar has decided, enough's enough. Shayla's old enough and he's not being given to me, or I'm not being given to him, therefore I need to take matters into my own hands. And so she poses as a prostitute. Yehuda is apparently taken by her, by seeing her, and decides to enlist her services, and they make a deal, and the Torah takes time explaining to us what the deal was. It wasn't good enough for the Torah to tell us that she had some of his things. The Torah has to tell us, she said to him, what will you give me? What's the payment? And he said, he'll pay a goat. And she said, well, what about a collateral? And he said, okay, I'll do a collateral. What do you want for the collateral? She says, I'll tell you what the collateral will be. And he gives her the collateral. Okay. And then she was a fake prostitute. She wasn't really a prostitute. So then she goes back to her widow's clothing. Then Yehuda goes to pay off the debt. Apparently the Torah finds this is an important part of the story, that Yehuda sends his friend to pay off the debt. And he can't find her because there was no prostitute there, because Tamar was really a fake. And he asked the people, you know, there was nobody ever here. And then he comes back to Yehuda, and Yehuda says, oh, you know what, so let her keep it. Fine. I tried to make good my end of the deal, and it hasn't worked out, so she can keep the collateral. That's the story. It is important to realize that Tamar is held up as a great tzaddikess. Excuse me. Baruch atah Adonai Eloheinu Melech HaOlam Sha'akol Nehiyeh Bivaro.
Amen.
Tamar is never criticized for having done what she did. That is somewhat striking, because Tamar, there ought to be two strikes against what Tamar did, although there are none. The two strikes are that, first of all, she was a shomeres yavam, which means she was waiting for yibum, for the levirate marriage. She was waiting for Shelah. Now, the halacha is, the law is, in Jewish law, if a woman's husband dies, God forbid, without children, and he has an eligible brother, then this woman may not remarry until either the eligible brother does Yibum, which means he marries her himself, or does Chalitza, which is the process of permitting her to marry somebody else. The tie to her husband's brother is not as strong as an Eshes Ish, as a married woman. As we know, of course, a married woman is prohibited to commit adultery, but there still is a prohibition against this woman living with anybody else until that tie is severed. There is somewhat of a tie to her husband's brother. Here, Tamar goes on her own and gets Yehuda to live with her when she knows that she is prohibited to any other man other than Shelah, who is the remaining brother. So that's problem number one with what Tamar did, and she's never criticized for it. Why not? Obviously, it wasn't a problem. The question is, why wasn't it a problem? Second potential thing that one could criticize Tamar for is posing as a prostitute. In that, that is not exactly the most modest thing to do. And how is that considered to be an appropriate means of getting what she wanted? It certainly wasn't marriage. At least it doesn't appear to have been marriage. So is that an appropriate way? I understand that she wanted to, Chazal tell us, she wanted to have children from Yehuda, whether from Yehuda himself or Yehuda's sons, because she wanted to be the mother of royalty, to bring about the royal line in the Jewish people, which she ended up doing. But is this an appropriate means? Wouldn't it have been better if she had a reason why it was appropriate to do? Shouldn't she have spoken to Yehuda about it? Why go about it in this manner? So that is something else that has to be dealt with. On Yehuda's side of things, obviously, it's difficult to understand how he could live with someone who he believed was a prostitute. Isn't Yehuda a great tzaddik? Again, Yehuda is not criticized for having done what he did. Moreover, when Tamar eventually will have her children, they are considered to be children that are born without any blemish, without any stain on their parents' record. They're not considered to have been born out of wedlock. They are not considered to have been born in a union that was prohibited. And so this is a very difficult story to understand, in that we would have thought there should be some criticism here about what Yehuda did, about what Tamar did, and the children should have some kind of mark on their record about how they were brought into this world. But we find none of that in Chazal. Remember that both Yehuda and Tamar were aware that what was at stake was the line of royalty in the Jewish people. Yehuda was aware of it, we talked about that last week, and Tamar is aware of it as well. Also remember that Tamar was the daughter of Shem, the son of Noah. Tamar came from very great ancestry and knew a lot about how things work in the world. Let's look at the words a little bit more carefully. Question number one. Back in verse 12, Pasuk Yud Beis. Bas Shua dies. Yehuda takes comfort. How is he consoled? He goes to shear his sheep. Why is shearing his sheep a form of consolation? But before we answer that question, look at the next verse. Very curious verse. Vayugad v'tamar leimor, was told to Tamar saying, Hine chamich ole simnasa lagos sono. Behold, your father-in-law is going up to Timna to shear his sheep. Now, I understand that for the flow of the story, it is important that we know that Tamar was told that her father is going up to Timna. Because her father-in-law is going up to Timna. Because once she heard that her father-in-law was going up to Timna, then she went ahead and posed on the road as a prostitute, so he would pass her by. So it's important that we know that she knew where he was going. Why do we have to know that she was told the reason why Yehuda was going to Timna? Your father-in-law is going to Timna to shear his sheep. Why is that being accentuated? It can't be because we don't know it. We do know it. We know it from the previous verse. We were already told why Yehuda was going to Timna. The Torah is telling us that Tamar was not only told that he was going to Timnah, Tamar was told he was going to Timnah to shear his sheep. That's crucial. So she goes, next verse, she removes her widow's clothing, and she puts on vitsa'if. Now there is a mistake in the translation over here. I say mistake, I don't mean that you can't translate it the way they did it, but it is not 100% accurate. They translate it as, so she removed her widow's garb from upon her, covered herself with a veil. That is incorrect. The Torah does not say a veil, it says ba-tsa'if. Ba-tsa'if is a contraction of bi-ha-tsa'if, in the veil. It does not say a veil, it says the veil. She covered herself with the veil. Definite article. What veil did she cover herself with? The veil. Some of you may remember, I did point out earlier in the Chumash, a veil, and told you then that we would be referring to it again when we got to this story.
Rachel and Leah?
Not Rachel and Leah.
Rivka.
Rivka. When?
She came to Yitzchak.
When she made Yitzchak. Hold the place on page 210. Turn back. When is the first time the word se'if is used in the entire Torah? That is back in Parshas Chayei Sarah. And it is the only previous time that the word se'if is used. On page 120. We'll start with Pasuk Samach Dalet 64. Vatisa Rivka es Eineha. Rivka lifted up her eyes. Vatera es Yitzchak. And she saw Yitzchak coming towards them. Vatipo me'al gamal. She fell off the camel. Vatomer elo evit. She said to the slave, Mi ho yish alozeh? Who is this man ha-holech basad eli krasenu who's coming in the field to greet us? Vayomer ho evit hu adoni. The slave said, he is my master. Vatikach hatsa if. And she took the veil and Vatiskas, and she covered herself. That is the first time that the word si'if is used, the veil.
So how does Tamar get this veil?
How does Tamar get this veil? That I cannot answer.
Why is it called the veil here?
Because it's significant. This is a significant veil. It's not just any veil. What's that? No, that doesn't say that in the Mishnah. So Rivka had this veil. She used it to cover herself when she was about to see Yitzchak, who was going to be her husband. And somehow it appears that Tamar has the same veil. Again, how Tamar got it, I don't know. I do know that Rivka does have a conversation with Tamar's father in the beginning of Parshas Toldos, when Rivka becomes pregnant and she goes to shame the son of Noach to inquire about her two sons. And I told you then the most profound prophecy, perhaps of all time, I shouldn't say of all time because it's before Moshe Rabbeinu, but certainly in Sefer Bereishis, is what Shem tells Rivka at that time, that you have two nations inside of you, and they will forever be a seesaw. Neither one will be able to, they will never be equal, and the older will serve the younger. That was about Yaakov and Esav. Rivka talked to Shem at that time. Did she give him the veil at that time? I don't know. I just know that they did have contact, Rivka and Shem, and somehow Tamar here has this veil. Yes?
It kind of says the veil in Vayeshev. Does it mean that it's the same?
It doesn't have to mean. I'm suggesting that it is.
Oh, okay.
Okay? Now, let's go on. We're not done with questions before we give answers. The pasuk says, again, and back on page 210, so she covered herself in the veil, and she wrapped herself up. Vateshev befesach einayim, she sat at the opening of the eyes. Well, the opening of the eyes is a funny phrase to use. The simple meaning is, she sat in a place that everybody could see her. She wanted to be noticed. And so she sat where she could be seen. Befesach einayim, it says in the English, by the crossroads. The literal translation is, the opening of the eyes. The Gemara tells us, the Talmud says, what does it mean, the opening of the eyes? It means she sat in the Pesach of Avraham Avinu. She sat in the doorway of Avraham Avinu. Shekoleinayim mitzapos lirosa. That all eyes hope to see it. That's what it means. She sat in the doorway of Avraham Avinu, that all eyes long to see it. Say, so where is this place? The doorway of Avraham Avinu. There are two opinions. There are two opinions. One opinion is that this is the Eshel Avraham. This is that hotel that Avraham had built. As it says back in Parashas Vayera, you do not have to turn there, but I will tell you where it is if you'd like to see it. Back in Parashas Vayera, it is on page 98. It says, Vayita Eshel Biver Shava, and Avraham, the English translates it as, he planted an Eshel, just as Eshel, in Beersheba. An Eshel, Rashi says, is a place where guests could eat, drink, and sleep, and be taken care of before they needed to go on their road. It was a place where Avraham would take in guests. It's verse 33, Lamed Gimel. That is one explanation. Others say that it was not in Beersheba where the doorway of Avraham Avinu was, but rather it was in Hebron. And the doorway of Avraham Avinu means the doorway where Avraham Avinu currently resides, which is the Ma'aras HaMachpelah, where Avraham is buried. So she was either sitting in the Ma'aras HaMachpelah, where Avraham is currently buried, or in the Eshel Avraham, that hotel that Avraham had built. Either way, she was sitting in a place that was considered to be holy, that was considered to be an elevated place. It was not considered to be a mundane place. That is where she is when Yehuda sees her. Yes?
Is it normal that she wanted to daven to the Kalach when they wanted
to? It's possible. But it appears that she chose the place so that she would be noticed there. It seems to me that she knew that she would be noticed more in these places because
everyone wanted to see
her. Well, that's true too. But because the last place you would expect to see a prostitute would be in a holy place. In fact, if someone on the caliber of Yehuda would see a prostitute in a holy place, let's ask ourselves, if today, God forbid, a prostitute would plant herself down in the Ma'aras HaMachpelah, can you imagine the uproar? Can you imagine the indignant uproar that would follow? The stones that would be thrown? Can you imagine? And would we blame anybody for being indignant about it?
My Zadia Lava Shalom wrote a book, and he mentioned there about Yehuda and Tamar.
Mm-hmm.
And he was saying that what attracted Yehuda was that she was sitting in a way of prayerful entreaty.
Okay.
And since he was so spiritually sensitive, this attitude of prayerful entreaty attracted him.
Okay, very good. Very good. Well, we'll see that what I'm going to say is going to dovetail with what your grandfather?
Yeah.
Okay. Now, but so far we're saying the facts of the story, and we're not yet giving an explanation about it. So she was there, and Yehuda would therefore notice her. Most likely he would notice her and be quite shocked that she would be there. The next pasuk says, Tesva 15, Yehuda saw her and thought her to be a zona, for she covered her face. Now this is extremely difficult. Does a prostitute cover her face or uncover her face? Covering her face would be very difficult to pose as a prostitute. That doesn't seem to make sense. Yet we know that that's what she was doing. Now it says that she put on a veil, but our sages tell us that what this means is not that she covered her face now. It's that Yehuda did not know that who she was. He thought her to be a prostitute. I'll leave back up for a minute. Leave back up for 1 minute. Nothing said anything about a prostitute until here. When she sat there on the crossroads, it did not say that she posed as a prostitute. It just said that she took off her widow clothing and put on the veil and sat where she would be noticed. Doesn't say that she tried to pose as a prostitute. But this verse says, Yehuda saw her and thought she was a prostitute, for she covered her face. Now that doesn't make any sense. Why would he think she's a prostitute because she covered her face? He may think that she is a woman who he doesn't know because her face is covered. But why would he think she's a prostitute? And so our sages tell us that she covered her face when she was living in Yehuda's home, married to Yehuda's sons. Yehuda did not really recognize his daughter-in-law. She was so modest that she did not show herself to her own father-in-law. Now, does that mean he never saw her face? It doesn't have to mean that. I don't know. But it at least means that they were not familiar with each other. And so, he did not know who she was, for she had covered her face whenever she was in his home. And so now, where he sees her, he doesn't know who she is.
In other words, you're saying at that time her face was not necessarily covered. It's an explanation.
Correct. Correct. That's what Chazal say.
Oh.
Now, the next verse, 16. Vayet eleha el haderech. Now, those words are the grammar there is completely wrong. He turned to her to the road. Did he turn to her or did he turn to the road? Vayet eleha el haderech. He turned to her to the road. Now, if you ask me, what does that mean? It means he turned to her, and then he turned to the road. He was walking along the road. He saw her. He turned to her, then turned to the road. You don't say he turned to her to the road. The road wasn't towards her. The road was past her. Vayet eleha el haderech. Again, Chazal tell us, he turned to her and then turned to the road. He had no intention of going towards her. And then he turned to her and then he turned to the road. And then he turned to her and then he turned to the road. And he turned to her and he turned to the road. He kept trying to turn to the road. And he kept getting pushed towards her. Chazal tell us that Hashem sent a malach, an angel, and pushed him towards her. Vayet eleha el haderech. He kept trying to veer away from her, and the more he tried to turn away from her, the angel pushed him towards her. Next, keep reading here. Vayomer, he said, Hava na avo elayich. Hava means prepare. Prepare now, I will consort with you. Ki lo yadaki chala sohi. For he did not know that she was his daughter-in-law. And if he would have known she was his daughter-in-law, then he would not have done this.
Where's Shayla?
Shayla's at home.
No.
She saw him that he'd grown up.
Was it?
He was
no, the him. Years had passed.
But didn't it just together? Say she yes. saw that he had grown up?
Yeah, no, not that they weren't in the same house. She knew that he was older. Rosli, there saw means she understood.
Okay.
Yeah, no, it doesn't mean she actually saw Shayla. She understood that he had grown up. And so, he says to her, he will consort with her. Why? Because he did not know she was his daughter-in-law. Had he known she was his daughter-in-law, he would not have done this. She says, what will you give me to consort with me? Now, I ask you, if he thought she was a prostitute, which the Torah tells us that's what he thought, then doesn't he know that there's a price?
Money.
Doesn't it cost something? If he knows that she's a prostitute and he's interested in enlisting her services, well, then you have to pay. So here she says to him, okay, what are you going to pay? And he doesn't have anything to pay with. He says, I'll send a gedi izim, a goat from the flock. That's a funny thing. You would think if he's he should take out some money and pay her. He was traveling without any money.
Well, jewelry, maybe
not
jewelry.
I mean, it's very strange. The Yehuda had nothing on him. He left his wallet at home. So what? He's traveling to Timnah.
But it says here he detoured. So, in other words, he turned away from her.
But then he was pushed back. That's what Chazal tell us. But it's a funny thing. It's also a funny thing that she did not name her price. Notice what happens over here. He says to her, okay, prepare yourself. She says, all right, what are you going to give me? Don't you have a price? What do you mean, what am I going to give you? Isn't there a going rate? Right? What are you going to give me? So he says, you know what? I'm not going to give you cash. I'm not going to give you jewelry. I'm going to give you a goat, which isn't even here right now. I'll send it. Trust me. Take my word for it. She says, if you give me collateral now. So she doesn't say that's a bad price. She agrees to the price. But she says, but I need collateral now. I can't trust you. He says to her, what collateral should I give you? Now, how come he didn't offer a collateral? When it came to the price, she said to him, you tell me what you're going to give me. And he names the price. When it comes to the collateral, he says to her, what collateral should I give you? And she names the collateral. And the Torah feels it's necessary that we know these details. The Torah didn't just run through this in two words. He gave her something, and they went ahead with their business. No. First it says this whole deal going back and forth. And he says, I will send, I will give you right now. He says, what should I give you? And she says, I want your signet ring, your belt, or your, what does it say over there? Your wrap, and your stick that's in your hand. And he gave it to her, and he consorted with her, and she became pregnant from him. Okay. 19. Vatakam vatelech. She got up and she left. Vatasar si'ifa me'aleha. She removed her veil. What did it say before?
The veil.
All of a sudden, the veil has become her veil. In the interim, from the time that she put on the veil until the time she took off the veil, it has gone from being the veil, which we've associated with Rivka, to being her veil. She has left her mark on this veil. This veil is now known as Tamar's veil. It used to be the veil. Not necessarily Tamar's veil, it was the veil. Now it is Tamar's veil. And forever after, that's how we know. It is Tamar's veil.
What was the significance of this veil?
What's that?
Did we mention this?
No, we haven't said it. So this veil has become her veil. She's acquired it. And she put on her widow's clothing. Now, it becomes absurd. Yehuda sends, the Torah goes through all the details. Yehuda sends the goat with his friend the Adulami to take the collateral back. He doesn't send the payment because he owes her money. He owes her a goat. He sends it in order to get back the collateral. That's what he wants. From the woman. He doesn't find her. He asks the men of her place, where's that prostitute that was here in front of when the crossroads so people could see her? And they said, we never saw a prostitute. He returns to Yehuda and he says, I didn't find her. And also the people said there never was a prostitute. The Torah has to repeat all this to us. The Torah tells it to us twice. The Torah could have written, he went and came back and told Yehuda there was nobody there, and they said there never was a prostitute here. But instead the Torah tells it to us twice. He went, couldn't find her, asked. They said there never was a prostitute. He went back to Yehuda and said, I couldn't find her, and they said there never was a prostitute. We get reported the story. We get the story
there.
Twice. What's that?
He was also there. He went with Yehuda to...
At the time, but not to
but
pay
them. She was there.
Yeah, but now he can't find her, and he asked the people, and they said there was none. Okay. So... So Yehuda says, okay, tikach la, she can keep it. I really wanted back my signet ring, my wrap, and my stick. I prefer to have had that back. All right, let her keep it. Lest we be degraded. I've sent this goat, and she wasn't around. So let's understand a little bit more what's happening. So these are the issues at hand. And let's see how much of this we can put together in the amount of time we have left. Quick question, only quick.
Isn't a signet ring and a wrap and much more valuable than a goat?
I can't tell you. I don't know how much a goat costs.
But, you know, the signet ring and the wrap and the staff are proof that he was with her.
Correct. And she's going to use it as proof.
Yeah.
That's what she wants.
Yeah, exactly.
Right. Right.
So that's, you know,
it's personal. It's,
yeah. Mm-hmm.
She wants to have something personal.
A goat is impersonal.
And yeah. Then the rat, the veil, first was Rebecca's veil. Okay, Rebecca was one of the matriarchs. And we all came from the matriarchs. Now it's her veil. So this puts her in the same status as the matriarchs, because now it's her veil.
And who's coming from her?
The Jewish people.
Not the Jewish people.
The king.
The kings. Loyalty.
The kings. Okay.
She is becoming a matriarch. Not the matriarch of the whole people, but the matriarch of royalty.
Oh, okay.
Just as Rus, and we're going to read about on Shavuos, becomes the matriarch of royalty, Tamar enters that category as well.
Then there's one other thing. I know she's supposed to be a righteous woman. But I have a feeling that, and I know she wanted to have the child from the line of Yehuda. But when she saw that Shelah had grown up and he wasn't given to her, do you think she spitefully did what she did to get back and also to be, you know, become what she wanted to become?
It's hard to say that because, again, she's not criticized.
Yeah, no.
You know, and we never find it. I've said this before. Our sages are not afraid to criticize, as we know. When people do things wrong, they get nailed. Nobody pulls punches. Anybody who's blamed, and Yehuda is going to be blamed for something, but not for living with a prostitute. That's not what he's going to be. He will be blamed. He'll be blamed for selling Yosef. He'll be blamed for eventually he's going to admit to what he did. But our sages are never afraid to blame when there is blame to go around. And here, we don't find that Tamar is blamed for that. It seems that what she did was considered appropriate. So now let's see. One last question I have to ask you, which I also mentioned to you before. The payment is a young goat. Two other places where we have had young goats used in a story. Not necessarily young, but goats. A goat, a single goat. Okay. Rivka, same Rivka, when she wants Yaakov to steal the blessings, she tells Yaakov, go to the flock and take from me from there two young goats. One which she prepares for Yitzchak. But it says the same thing, Gedi Izim, Shnei Gedalye Izim, two young goats. That's what it says back there in Parashas Toldos. Again, I will give you the chapter and verse. On page 134, in verse 9, Lechno el atzon, go now to the sheep, v'kach li misham shnei gedaye izim tovim, take me from there two young goats that are good, and I will make them into delicacies for your father. Again, the association with Rivka. That's number one. Number two, not so long ago, and I pointed this out to you at the time, in Parashas Vayeshev, when the brothers sold Yosef, on page 206, and they needed to fake his death, they took a goat and slaughtered the goat. On verse 31, Lamed Aleph, Vayikhu es Ksonas Yosef, they took the tunic of Yosef, Vayishchatu Silizim, and they slaughtered a goat, Vayitbelu es Hakutonis Badam, and they dipped the tunic in the blood. Okay. That was on page 206. Yehuda, as we mentioned last week, Yehuda was interested in building royalty. He knew the royalty was to come from him and was trying to build royalty. He turned to his friend, this man Chira, the Adulami, And perhaps next time we can discuss that word adulami. And he, and then he marries this woman, Bas Shua, who is the daughter of a merchant or a Canaanite, depending how you translate the word Canaani. He has three sons, Er, Onan, and Shelah, and he takes Tamar for the three sons. Tamar, Er dies, Onan dies, Yehuda says, forget it, Tamar's not the one. Yehuda is despondent. His wife now has died. His two sons are dead. He has one more son left, but he doesn't know what to do for this son. He needs to find another woman who could potentially bear the ancestry of royalty. Tamar seems to be a failure because she killed her first two sons, his first two sons, he thinks. What does he do? So he goes up to shear his sheep. Now, what is the shearing of the sheep? I mentioned to you before Pesach that shearing sheep, sheep is always a symbol of Bechor, of the firstborn. The first time sheep are mentioned in the Torah is when Hevel, Abel, brings Mi Bechoros Tzono Umechavehem. He brings from the firstborn of his sheep as a carbon, as a sacrifice to God. Yehuda goes up to shear his sheep. I don't have the time now to show you all the references, but we will find in other places in Scripture that shearing of the sheep is considered a festive time for the tribe of Yehuda. The Yehuda tribe considers the shearing of the sheep to be a festive time. It seems to me that part of the reason for that is because Yehuda is royalty, and the Bechora, the firstborn, is an element of royalty. Now, it's not only an element of royalty, but that one of the elements of the firstborn is royalty. The part of the Bechora that goes to Yehuda is royalty. Remember, there are three crowns that we Jews have: the crown of royalty, the crown of Kahuna, the priesthood, and the crown of Torah. Those are the three. The one of those three, the branch that goes to Yehuda, is that of royalty. So there's an element of Bechor. Yehuda, in order to console himself with his wife's death, and seemingly the line of royalty is having a hard time getting started, and Yehuda knows that it's going to be tough to get it started, because that line of royalty is crucial for the Jewish people and for the world, as we've talked about before. How the whole system of what God wants in the world follows the line of King David, up until Mashiach comes. And so, Yehuda goes up to shear his sheep. Tamar hears that Yehuda is going to Timnah to shear his sheep, and the bells go off in her head. She understands that he's going to shear his sheep because he's looking for direction about royalty. He's looking to channel this strength of Bechor, of the birthright, of where royalty is going to come from. And Tamar takes matters into her own hands. And she takes the veil that her grandmother-in-law, Rivka, is a great-grandmother-in-law? Grandmother-in-law, Rivka, had worn when she met Yitzchak. And she wants to tap in to Rivka, because Rivka is where the birthright comes from. Because she's the one who orchestrated and engineered that we got the birthright and not Esav. And so she wants that to tap into Rivka. And so she takes that si'if. She takes that veil. And she goes. Now, a bit of law for a minute. The levirate marriage, what about that? I mentioned before, shouldn't there be criticism for her because of the levirate marriage? How can she marry anybody else? After the Torah was given, then the levirate marriage can only be done by a brother. It must be a brother who marries the widow in order for a levirate marriage to take place. If there is no eligible brother, then there is no levirate marriage. Then she can marry whomever she pleases. Before the Torah was given, many of the commentaries explain that the levirate marriage, Yibum, could be performed by any close male relative. And a father of the deceased would also qualify. And so she decides, rather than wait for Shelah, who is anyway not being given to me, I'll go directly to Yehuda and let him perform the levirate marriage. And here's the important part. A levirate marriage does not require a wedding ceremony. A levirate marriage is performed by simply living together. That is it. There are no witnesses necessary. There is no document necessary. There is no rabbi necessary.
Like Rus and Boaz.
Well, Rus and Boaz, they did have a legal marriage. But that is the way a Yibum works, a levirate marriage. It does not need any of these things. You don't need the accoutrements of marriage. And so why? Because the way a levirate marriage works, and we don't need to get into all the details of this, but what's essentially happening is the brother is replacing the deceased. And so the marriage that had already taken place between this woman and the deceased man and the brother, that just simply gets shifted to the new man, to the brother. And there's no need for anything else to happen. And that's what she's doing with Yehuda. So she's not going to be criticized because it was permitted for her to marry Yehuda, and she doesn't need a legal marriage. All she needs is to live with him, and that's fine. And then she is bound to him, and she's married. And so she goes and stands in a place where he will see her. Yehuda sees her in the most shocking of places. He sees her in, let's use the Ma'ara Samachtel, because that's the one that fits in better to this explanation. The other one will work as well, but this is even better. The Ma'ara Samachtel. He sees her in the place where Adam and Chava are buried, where Abraham and Sarah are buried, where Rivka, and we don't know if Yitzchak had died yet at this point, whether he had died or not, is buried. And if Leah had died yet or not, if she had died, then she's buried there as well, his own mother. And he sees her there. Remember, we have talked in the past about... Oh, I'm late for Mincha. We've talked in the past about Adam. Adam, the name Adam, Adam, stands, Aleph Dalet Mem, stands for Adam, David, Mashiach. That's what it stands for. And he is shocked. He sees this woman there. And he thinks she's a prostitute. How disgusting is that? A prostitute sitting in the Ma'ara Samachpelah. And then he gets pushed towards her. He turns away. And he's pushed again. And he turns away. And he's pushed again. He says, this is ridiculous. What is going on here? And Yehuda realizes there is something very important happening. Something that is beyond himself. It is not something that makes any sense to him. But there's something happening. And so he decides he must now follow up on this. And so he says to her, prepare yourself. Our sages tell us. He asked her, are you married? She said, no. He said, are you impure right now? She said, no. He said, well, maybe you are married, you don't realize it. Maybe your father married you off when you were a little girl and you don't even know. So she said, I'm an orphan. He questioned her to make sure, to see, like, maybe there's something wrong with her. He was trying to give himself a reason why this shouldn't be done. But she had all the answers. And so, therefore, he went ahead with the rest of what happened. And when she asks for payment, he says, I will send a Gedi Izim. Because he too, a goat, he too realizes that there's something here about royalty that's about to happen. And so he also goes back to Rivka. She goes back to Rivka with the veil. He goes back to Rivka by using a young goat, just as she used the young goat to get that birthright. And that's what he offers her. And then the story goes on from there. We don't have time now to finish off the last part about the exchange of the collateral and then sending his friend back with the collateral, and she's not there, and about how the men of the place didn't know, etc., etc. So that we will leave Blinetta for next time, and I really hope we finish off the story next time where we will cover also, I hope, that we also cover this name Adulami next time. I discovered something today which I think you will enjoy next week.